was small, I would travel every summer from Detroit to northern Michigan and visit my relatives who lived in an A-frame cottage in the woods along Lake Huron. I would run out to the end of the creaky wooden dock every morning to watch the sun rise over the lake. I would look down into the water and, through my reflection, see tiny fish. I would reach out to touch them, and they would swirl away in a flash of silver and green and blue and gold. Swirl. Swirl. Swirl away. Swirl. Swirl.
The internet ad was enough to make my meeting with foul-ophile Beauregard Pomerantz of the 61st Mobile Duck Battalion of Bismuth, Delaware, moot. Quote, "Did you listen to the music in water?" Unquote, queried the Sun Pride Company.
Who listen to the music in... Who?
This is the question posed by the website. Do you listen to the music in water? And, of course, since I figured you would say, oh, that can't be real. I mean, they don't put that sort of material on the website. Here, I printed out the front page of it.
Darava, very, very good.
Query the Sun Pride Company of Samutpadakarn, Thailand website cookie. Before I could answer, a squadron of obstreperous sparrows landed in the nearby fen and began to voraciously peck at the gelatinous potash stew. They all pecked in eerie simultaneity, which produced a muffled rhythmic tapping. My attention momentarily diverted from the web ad, I subconsciously counted the taps. By the time Sun Pride resumed its pitch about its Darovok underwater loudspeaker, a, quote, creative device for you to enjoy the beautiful music in water or in high humidity, end quote, I had tabulated 267. Coincidentally, the atomic weight of unnubium, one of the unsung flavor crystals that gives potash its distinctive aftertaste.
Now, I did a little exploration.
I guess you did.
And I discovered that that was not quite true.
What? You mean it's not quite true? Of course it's true.
It's not true at all.
What isn't true about it?
The atomic weight.
Why not? It says so right on my online encyclopedia.
Your online encyclopedia is old.
No.
There have been some changes.
Have there?
Yes. It seems that 267 is only the atomic weight of meitnerium when it has gone through a high energy emission of a high energy alpha particle. It becomes atomic weight 267, and that's the only time. It's normally 265, and it was created when bismuth 209 was hit by iron 58, and that produced this particular element. But it turns out that no, the one that you claim here
unubium.
is not, and that's not ubium anyways, anunbium. Right,
yes.
Right, and that's not it, that's gone. You won't find that there anymore.
Wait, some revisions are due then?
Oh, yes, some revisions are in fact due. So you actually have the result of a particle being emitted to an unnamed element on its way to being 258 dubnium.
Dubnium?
And on the way down to 258 Rutherfordium. So we have to make sure that our science is accurate. So I just thought I'd clarify that.
How do you know yours is accurate and mine isn't?
Because mine's newer.
How new is it?
It's very new. It's the periodic table from the new one, from the U.S. government.
Oh, no, not those people.
United States
of
America.
You believe
them? Right here, .gov.
Oh, crime.
Periodic Elements 109.
I'll have to research.
You'll have to look. Yes, right. Now, where were we?
Numerologists take note. 267 is A, the number of visitors since December 2000 to the Sun Pride Company website.
Probably.
B, the essay number that introduced large pecking sparrows to the popular culture consciousness. And C, the total weight of Pomerantz's feisty flying battalion. After exhausting the bog of most of its potassium carbonate, the birds settled down, and I was able to think again about enjoying beautiful music in water or high humidity. throughout history, and even for 8 years before that, water and music have been inextricably linked. The list of water-related musical compositions could fill, if not a book, at least this essay. Arguably, the most famous is G.F. Handel's Water Music, composed for an eponymous Thames River barge party in 1717. King George I, on whose dime the party was funded, wanted the music, quote, to flow wet like a field of sodden bunnies, end quote. And most musical scholars think Papa Handel captured the mood exactly right. But that was to be the last significant water-themed tune for nearly two centuries, as the world's climate suddenly changed and the entire northern hemisphere suffered a period of extreme drought. So as not to arouse the passions of the thirsty populace, most civilized nations instituted decrees banning all music that could be considered wet. Nobody worried about censorship issues then. Everyone was too preoccupied with finding that next drop of drinking water. Hostilities erupted over the most trivial water issues. The Scandinavian Civil War resulted after a Stockholm furniture company introduced the waterbed. Ice briefly went extinct. Several cultures counter-evolved into ocean-going organisms. But in 1901, the rains at last returned. And so did the ancillary music. And so did the ancillary music. That music. In some areas, it rained too much. The Alsace Valley of France that year suffered a devastating flood, which was melodically depicted by local composer A.C. Debussy in La Cathédrale Engloutée, The Sunken Cathedral. What?
There's a spelling error there.
There is?
Yes, how but can that's I? Okay. We can just go move right around.
Sunken
right
is on. Misspelled?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. 2 years later, he scored another hit with his tone poem La Mer, or The Mayor, a musical portrait of Jacques, a Parisian arrondissement administrator who was made entirely of water. After Debussy cracked open the floodgates, the rush to write more water-themed compositions was on. In America, rivers were big musical business. In rapid succession, Stephen Foster wrote Swanee River, a lyrical tribute to the riparian protozoa called Swanee that infest many Appalachian watercourses. Freddie Groffay wrote the Mississippi Suite, which, despite its name, takes the listener on a maritime tour of the Missouri River between Oswego, Montana, and Williston, North Dakota.
I played in that tune.
You did?
In high school, we played the Mississippi Suite in a band arrangement.
And could you tell when you were passing through Montana?
Yeah, I had to release all the liquid from my spit valve.
Yes. Yes, that would do it. Richard Rodgers double whammied the river theme. With South Pacific and Victory at Sea.
Which we don't have a copy of right here, but we could hum.
Stochastic abstractions of, respectively, the sedimentation and girth of the Los Angeles River. And Virgil Thompson, against big odds, came through with The River, the musical tale of a Chinese radiologist's fondness for bile-secreting glandular organs. Jumping ahead 4/5 of a century, contemporary American composer Todd Levin, and I believe that's the music we're hearing now.
We're hearing some Todd.
Something Todd, yeah, Todd yeah. Levin. Claims that his piece, Swirl, was inspired by an obscure fork of the Gauley River deep in the West Virginia boondocks, where unusual reality discombobulating phenomena occur, not the least of which is the bickering of loud fowl over their share of the river's stock of potassium carbonate. Numerologists, are you still there?
Thinking about Old Man River.
Old Man?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Old Man. Old
yeah,
Man.
That one.
Of course.
Yes.
267 is also D, the number which, when multiplied by 1.1835, equals 316, the episode number of today's Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, while 1.1835 is E, by many accounts, the number of syllables actually enunciated in the name Calvos.
Very close indeed. It is also, when added to the number 1700, the year 1967, in which I attended the school whose alma mater was on the banks of the old Raritan.
Oh, that
Yes, Yes, that's also a river.
So it is.
So it is, and a canal, which is more appropriate. Well, let's go back to some Todd Levin. We skip from swirl to blur to everyday, and we'll wrap up the little Todd Levin set with everyday.
Sure.
Because that's something we have every day, is some water music.
Don't you feel like you've just been in a movie and the popcorn is still sticking to the floor in front of you, and you've watched the credits and now it's time.
You watch the credits, you get up and you hear that slight ripping sound.
Ah.
You're stuck to that old-fashioned seat in
the
theater.
Oh, well, sure.
Yeah.
That was Todd Levin.
Yes, it was. Now, rumor has it that, we should get him on this show one of these days just to find out what the truth is behind it. Of course, not have any idea whether it would really be the truth, but rumor has it that he wrote these pieces just sort of to provoke the classical establishment.
Oh, good.
And I'm not sure how true that is, but it certainly makes a great story.
Sure.
We like stories.
Now, he's a Californian, is he? Do we know who he is?
I believe he is. I believe he was elsewhere at one time, but we'll find out more about him at some day when we actually see if we can provoke him to come on the show by accusing him of anti-academic, anti-intellectual music.
Property.
Yes. And the recontextualization of orchestral music into post-disco weaning.
Yes.
instead, let's go to the opposite of post-disco fluff weanings.
Is there? I guess there would be.
Yeah, the pre-disco non-fluff work of Gottfried Wilhelm Ross, who along with Monique.
Yes.
Yes, we've got a lot of their music to play today because it was a long interview. We had a lot of fun and lots of things to talk about and music to hear. So let's listen to his piece Dynamo with Tom Powles on electric guitar and Home Trainer. This is on a piece called For Others. And we'll be back in about 5 minutes. And then at the top of the hour, just 15 minutes, we've got our concluding interview with Gottfried and Monique.
Yes, I'm looking for more sparks between the two.
Oh, there will be. Here's some Home Trainer and guitar. Thank you.
Well, you know, he just took the Todd Levin theme and took it in a different direction, I think. That was Dynamo by Tom... No, it was by Gottfried Kopp,
yeah.
Willem Reis, played by Tom Powell's electronic guitar and home trainer.
What's a home trainer? I meant to ask you that. You're supposed to know this stuff.
I thought it was something that one hid under the bed and pulled it out like a Nordic track. And then when one thwacks it enough, it makes these sounds.
Could be. I thought for some reason it was one of those home guitar trainers, those little tiny boxes, those little pigs.
Oh, yeah.
I really have no idea.
No, and it doesn't, the information in the zero liner notes.
Oh, well. Let's listen to some Monique Darge, unless you can find an instant.
It says the performer has to produce his own electricity required to power his amplifiers. As the piece gets more difficult, production of the power required gets problematic.
So it is a home trainer that you put under the bed, hooked to a generator.
That's right.
Very nice.
Oh,
good job, Gottfried. All right, Monique Darge. This is from Mocha Q. This is track 3 of these otherwise untitled compositions.
Hi, this is Mary Jane Leach. Yeah. You're listening to Calvis and Damien's New Music Bazaar on WGDR. Your red alert for new music. Oh, sorry.
WGDR Plainfield. That was the short version.
Yeah, I guess so.
Before that, from Mocha Q, the album Cyclic, that was track number 3, simply labeled 8 minutes 33 seconds.
I suppose that would be difficult to confuse with the swirl.
Absolutely. Well, I think we should go to that interview. Mm-hmm. We're going to back it up a little bit from last week to kind of get into
The mood,
right. It was right about this point where Hotfried and Monique decided they had some sort of stylistic disagreement. So I thought maybe we could just work it back a minute or so to see where those disagreements arose from. It was about the difference between the kind of extended environmental sort of pieces of Monique's that you just heard and the kind of energetic, noisy, technical pieces of Hotfried's that you heard just before that.
Yes.
All right, let's pick that interview up here in Belgium at the Logos Foundation.
In that respect, Gottfried and I are very different because Gottfried thinks of structures in compositions that have to be there, like a starting point and going to a climax and then going to an ending point and then...
Whatever, not
a
necessarily.
Real composition. For me, a real composition does not have to have that. I love drone music, like ever going on things, and Gottfried says I feel like claustrophobic if I have to play in there. For me, it's just endlessness because it has no climax, it has no beginning, no end. Of course, it stops sometimes, but it can go on for all time. And I think what I then personally think that I can offer to that scene where everything is already done, in fact, is like a kind of, I would call it content, but that sounds very pretentious. I don't want to say that. But a lot of other musics that I hear through mass media are just there for the
unspanning. I think we'd call them wallpaper.
Yeah, wallpaper, decoration, like, so yeah.
And unspanning, what is that word? Like enjoyment, but not thinking and just
background music or... We call it muzak or wallpaper
music.
Yeah,
you don't really have to listen.
No consciousness of it. It's just, it's there.
You come home from work, you are too tired to do anything on, and then you switch on the radio and that's there. And I think in new music still, there is something else that we can do, and that is like saying something, telling something through sounds. When I can just share a sound with you that you have a sense of being together and being a part of a larger entity, being part of like nature or even universe. I think that's an essential thing that you will never find in the contemporary things hearing on the mass media. And in that respect, Gottfried and I...
Yeah, but I disagree there with you, you know.
That's my idea.
Because with your drone thing, for me the fundamental problem is how do you talk people into it? You need something to seduce them. If I have to make a count, okay, it's all very
but
simple.
But what is wrong with the pure sound?
There is nothing wrong with the pure sound,
okay.
Provided the people just... Because if I go to a techno party, let's say, I know beforehand what I'm going to.
Yeah.
So I already know, I have an expectation, mm-hmm. and it will confirm my expectation also, generally, most of the time. Now, that's not my situation as an experimental music maker. I try to make something new so that the people cannot anticipate what's Gottfried going to do now. So my task is completely different. I cannot just do my thing and the people are all pleased. Oh, Gottfried, this is his thing again. No. I do a different thing. Now I have to talk the people into accepting this different thing. So I have the task to seduce them. And if you want to seduce people, that's not what they know already, then I have to have a method of doing that. And then I need this element of rhetoric. So that's why I think it's the weakness of, not of Monique's pieces, but of this concept. You make a drone piece...
But that's very European, I
would
say.
Yes, it is, definitely.
Yeah, because in America, we don't have that expectation of needing to be seduced. We have the expectation of needing to be pleased. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
And that's that is probably the greatest obstacle in new music in America, is that the architecture is irrelevant. It does not, if it's 3 minutes, it's good. If it's 5 minutes, it's okay. If it's 10 minutes, it's bad. How do we get past that? You see, unless it's a drone piece or a techno piece, in which case it is partly wallpaper and it can be in the background, and then we can listen for a while and then we can talk. Then we can listen some more and we can talk, or we can dance. And so the architecture is not something that we focus on. And so your point of view is valid in a sort of a cultural context.
Yeah.
And Monique's point of view is also valid in a cultural context. As experimental musicians, how do you jump over your cultural context?
They just can coexist. There is no conflict there. It's just that, well, it's true. What you say is very, very true. I think that it's absolutely true. You know what I'm saying? Well, I do my thing my way, etc. Yeah, and I don't object against Monique doing other things, having different approaches. It's also the same for the concert organization. We do concerts here of different kinds of music, completely American-oriented, in your terminology, music, if you like, and very German-oriented, architecture, structured music, etc. These things do exist together, and there's no reason why not show these elements. I don't see why there is an inherent contradiction, why you have to choose either this or that. It depends on circumstances.
And after all, I think it's a little bit... I think it was very interesting for me to hear you explain that. And the first moment I think, wow, that is a very good analysis of the situation. And now I think, as only some minutes later, I think there is a real mistake in there, because in a very small level, if you go into this very little details inside the big drone, there are all these kind of little architectural structures.
Yes.
And that's so wonderful, because they live inside the big hole, the big thing.
That's right. But of course, that's what made people like Steve Reich and Phil Glass work in their music, their very American minimalism, is that those tiny changes of phase and tiny changes of approach were cloaked by the huge shape. Mm-hmm. And you thought you were listening to the same piece the whole time, but if you listen to this part 20 minutes later, and then an hour later, you said, oh, that's not the same piece.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you never notice the change unless you pay attention. And that's where the various levels are in those
like
lung pieces.
Yeah.
Listening to water, streaming water.
No, that's different.
But
it is never, never the same.
No, but there's no structure.
You think it is the same and there is no structure, but there's a lot of structure. The structure is somewhere inside the big thing going on. And I think that is more that something, I experience it as something that is more human related and universe related, in the sense that life is like that. It's always there. And inside, there are all these little things happening. But if you go on another level, you see the whole thing always going on. A day is always a day, but it's always a different day.
You can take nature as an example, because that's going dal niente al niente.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
From nowhere to nowhere. There is
and
really
every
no
time you have the cycle of the seasons, and there you go. Every spring is a spring, but it's always a different spring.
I live by moving water.
Yeah.
My house is by moving water. That change, although it may not have a direction or a sort of deliberation, is always changing to the point where in the middle of the night, I will come awake and say, what has changed? Something has changed. And it's the sound of the water, because there's a water by the house.
Mm-hmm.
50 meters away, there is a dam and the water comes over.
Yeah,
and if the
water is
a little
lot,
higher or a little lower or a little change or something has changed, and the color changes, the sound changes.
Yeah.
And in the short term, there is no change. There's nothing that changes. And there's no deliberation. There's no one doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But there certainly is something that if you compressed it, if you pushed it all together in time, you would hear a cyclic piece that was almost like a rhythm that was continuous, except that if you compressed it more across centuries, you would hear the change that...
I think you're completely right. Actually, you make me think, you make an association there with a composer which you might have heard about. That's Albert Meyer.
Yes.
Who specialized exactly on those long, the periodicity of these long period events, be them natural events or human effects, like rhythms in lives over years, condensing them into concert size, taking that as a base. Yeah, but that's right. But the other hand, your example of music, it is true that it changes. On a small scale, it's pretty much random. On a large scale, it becomes a structure. But this structure is symptomatic for something else, say, for nature. Because if it rains a lot, few, well, hours, depends on the size of the dam, you will have more water. If it's dry, it's eventually it will dry out and we'll have no more water, some things like that. So it's just a symptom of something else. You can use the water to read the situation of nature. So it's doubling it.
Yeah.
So it's not telling a story of its own.
Yeah. That's right.
See what I mean?
That's true. That's true. But you know, it's so hard to determine when making your choices which of those choices you make will be implications of other events. This is always the problem of composing.
Yeah.
You know, both know that the choices you make are going to suggest something to someone else. And you have no control over that.
You have no control. No. No, but there are some elements that are.
But you want to seduce. You want
yes,
to seduce.
Yes, and I think seduction is universal.
Uh-huh.
Not all the elements we use for it. There are some are more basic than others. For instance, with beating someone up, it's rarely a way of seducing
yes.
someone. I think that's pretty universal.
And of course, you have all this percussion here. and we call it percussion, but you call it slagwerk.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
there's a difference. Yeah. So you beat.
No, but to seduce.
We're going to take a quick break from that. Yes, because we have some other little bits and pieces to play, including speaking of the Schlachtwerk. This is a tour of percussion that he has playing from his automatic instruments. Let's just listen to it.
And I believe if you click onto the website, you can follow along with the photographs.
There are photographs, yes, calvos.org, and go to the Logos Foundation page. Click on Monique's name or Gertrude Delmaras' name in the guest composer list, and then on over to see the animations. Let's listen to the MIDI-controlled chimes, and this is a tour with a microphone swinging around the instrument to give you kind of a spatial sense. Thank you. That was almost bringing us to their performance. They gave us a live performance. Shall we head back? Let's play a Monique piece, and then we'll get back to the interview. Here's from Monique Darge. This is a piece called Shh.
Good title.
And we call it percussion, but you call it schlagwerk. There's a difference. So you beat.
No, but to seduce, I think the first element you have to do in any piece is to interest people, to raise interest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So in the Latin sense of the word, that makes make the people be with it, interesse. If you don't achieve that, then you just have a wall. You do your thing. You don't make contact. And only when after you have interest, you can start off introducing elements so that this interest gets higher. Then you take them on your way to somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's the element of seduction. If you don't do that in a conversation, you show my big ego. Well, it's not about my big ego. That's not the thing. Well, I think that's how I feel about it. So in a certain way, that's maybe it is European as a way of thinking, but it's not this German romantic tradition.
No,
like
of course
it's not the Stockhausen idea of the Wagner idea.
No,
so,
no.
Because I am so important. Well, no, that's not the thing.
But you do talk about experimentalism. I was just trying to get at the differences of approach in experimentalism.
Yeah.
Sometimes experimentalism is surprise. Sometimes it's seduction. Sometimes it's even visual.
No, sure.
For sure. Oh, and yeah, you yeah, talk yeah. about how important that is.
Oh, it's, yes, yes, yes. That's very true.
And these things are beautiful, too. These are beautiful and funny. And you look around and you see the different ones and curiosity. We're still in an age of machines and technology, so that seeing a technological device is not like walking down and seeing Simbass. You know, you say, okay, that's there. But once that was a great technology.
Sure.
And so and it was a subject of just being there was a subject of not surprise because it took so long, but of wonder.
Yeah.
And these are, for our age, a subject of wonder. So part of your seduction is in,
Yeah, exactly. No, that's true. Yeah. Now, there is this particular element, of course, with machines in general, with electronics and these machines. It is to do with the fact that very often, people do not like machines because they say it's mechanical and that something has a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Now, I think there is nothing as human as a machine because the only thing that makes machines are humans. So it's the artifact par excellence, the ultimate creation of mankind. So that's why I like this ambiguity. So by giving the machines something real human, like make them move, make them do something, and also make them fail. Because all machine has finite possibilities,
yes,
and
yes.
I'm definitely sure in all my pieces I go at the edge of where the machine fails. And I know one thing. First of all, it fascinates me, and I do also think it fascinates the audience, because they see my prior piano playing, and it plays much faster and much more precise than any pianist. Yet, if you go over a certain speed, it starts missing notes. Now you can say, oh, that's terrible. No, I say, that's seduction. Because the people will feel sorry for the machine. You do this hard work, and here it fails.
I feel sorry for the machine.
You can succeed with machine by getting that. You make an action until the moment it doesn't work anymore, for whatever reason.
Amazing. That's a good idea. That's a good time. I remember the things that you remember are sometimes relate to that. I watched drummer Brian Johnson. I don't know if you know him. He's a very good American drummer. And he was playing a concert, a piece for snare drum alone, just snare drum, two sticks, snare drum, ba, 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 harder and harder and harder, and he broke his drumstick. He didn't expect to break his drumstick, and he broke his drumstick, and it went fly, hit me. That's how I remember it. And then but he was so good, he flipped it to the other side of the drumstick to continue the piece. And so that failure, the piece itself was okay, you know, a piece which, you know, it was good, but the thing I remember is the failure. So you're right, I think you're right.
Yeah.
But failure is a great part of human performance without machines.
Of course.
I mean the people that go to the opera and wait for the tenor to go.
That's why I think
the Queen of the Night, Mozart.
There are humans on stage also. Yeah.
There's this risk. That's the circus element is essential to any live performance. It must be a possibility of going wrong.
And experiment. You use the words experiment, and of course experiment contains in its understanding the fact that an experiment can also fail or not prove
believe.
There's always a risk in experiment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you, in experimenting, either of you in experimenting, start with the idea that you have some sort of idea that you're trying to prove in a given piece that may succeed or fail?
I think we always, I at least always try to prove the piece.
Money?
I cannot say that that's the starting point. No. I just start working, and at the end, that will be probably the result. But it's not the way where I'm going.
No, so but for me, it's essential. As soon as I am on stage with a certain piece, my task is to defend that piece. So there is a mission there.
Defend that piece is a strange attitude, because don't think that these people are aggressors. I think I just give something and they can accept it and enjoy it or think it's not something for them. So it's not defending in that way. It's just like you give something and perhaps they take it. It's a different approach.
Then we are again into this fundamentally different attitude.
It's an important difference. Yeah. And if I even dare say that, it's a very, very male-female difference.
Maybe so.
We see this very often. If Stevie, my wife who you met earlier, who's out today, were here, she would say, yes, you see, Monique is more willing to take her risk by offering something rather than presenting it, and you as a man say, here's mine, tell me what's wrong, you know, or you know, you convince, you seduce. Monique says, here it is. I may be wrong in my
in a way
interpretation,
but
that's sort of what I hear in the two different.
It's also because in her pieces, for instance, in as far as she composes, she makes pieces where she has, for instance, things like soundscapes and so on.
Yeah.
Now I must say,
you don't like soundscapes.
No. Wait a minute.
Okay.
You can have them, but if I have to perform a piece with a soundscape or a pre-recorded whatever, I really feel frustrated because it has an absolute time. And I can't interfere with the timing of the thing anymore. So I have to wait, and there I have to do this, and there I have to do that. When I see the audience gets nervous, I can speed it up a little bit or something, or get slower and say, hey, we have a nice concentration. So I
But that's a challenge to you. That's a challenge to you.
Yeah, but it
that takes you out of control.
Yeah, but it handicaps me in my will to to defend the piece for an audience, you know? Because I can't do anything in favor of it because it's there running off a CD.
Oh, money. Your turn.
Well, we discussed many times about that. I think I see it as for me, this kind of music just has no more time. It stops time. If a piece that I really like, I think this is a good piece, that's because it makes me forget about time. And then at that moment, there is no beginning or ending. There is just like life. It is there. You do something with it. You play with it. So,
in the sense that you can do nothing about that river.
Yeah,
it's there.
In the sense that if you're outside or if you're in a hall with the acoustics that are wrong, you have to. It's not the fault of the hall that your piece doesn't
but
work.
You can adapt. You can sometimes you cannot, but if say it's
with a soundscape, that's circumstance.
True. Yeah, that's your circumstance. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, with any concert has a certain amount of length, and also your piece. If you perform Book of Moves and Songbook, we perform for not exactly that many minutes, but it is a certain length.
Yeah,
so then also start and end is given. In time, and you perform with it.
No, there is an average duration, but you know very well that if we get to play for, let's say, all 16 years old, we will play certain sections longer and skip other sections. That's why always, before every performance, we decide on an order, and we'll do for this audience, we'll do this section, etc. Mm-hmm. We decide that, so it's variable.
But then,
so we have at least a feel on stage that we can go faster or slower. Although the piece is the piece, of course, Book of Moves takes this chunk of time in general.
We have agreed on beforehand we will play these sections, and we always play these sections. We never said in the midst of the performance, here, skip that piece. We never did that.
We can go real fast over some sections.
Okay, I let you turn the volume. The speed knob next time. It's funny, we were still work together and not work together, and it's so different approach.
How do your audiences react? I'll make the question easier. What was your moment in which the concert you gave was the most successful in terms of your audience and your interaction, and what was the worst night of your life?
Worst night of our life, I think I can tell. That will be the one in California, no? With the slowing down projector?
That wasn't so worse, actually. That was a very frustrating experience, that's true.
There we had a set length, because we used a film, and it was a Super 8 camera in that time, and we inclined it, because it was on the floor, projecting on a screen and above, and by itself, it started to slow down. And this piece,
as the weight of the pickup reel became heavier
and longer, And we were so nervous because we were not prepared to play that length of piece. And I felt like dying on stage. And afterwards, the Californian audience thought it was marvelous because it was so calming down.
At the end, they thought it was part of the performance. At the end, you just saw the single shots of the film really go like tuk, 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 stroboscopic.
Really? That slow? That's great.
Well, we have to play for 2 hours and a half instead of the planned 25 minutes for that piece.
No, not really that long?
It was extreme.
Oh,
really,
it was extreme.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, well, I have to think a little about that.
The best moment for me is when I'm playing a part in Gottfried Spee's songbook, when I can directly address the audience in Jabbertalk, and I perform like a Jabbertalk story. I love to do that, like fairy tale, but then because of my movements, the sounds change. So it's not only telling the fairy tale, but I am in the fairy tale. It's like realizing a child dream. I love that. That's my most wonderful moment, if that works with the audience. And sometimes you feel that the people are together with you in the fairy tale.
And we're going to take a quick break from that and listen to a little bit of a performance that they did live in the space right after the interview. They set up the equipment, the radar controllers and such, and I actually think this might be part of the songbook. They will be doing the songbook during our festival in August. We'll talk more about that in about a half hour. But let's hear a little bit of what they played for us here at the Tetrahedron at the Logos Foundation in Ghent, Belgium. It was it's just an amazing place. Again, if you go to calvos.org and look up Monique Darge, D-A-R-G-E, or Claude Willem Ross, R-A-E-S, you'll see some incredible pictures of this tetrahedron inside. It's inside a square building, and they built this tetrahedron theater. Really pretty amazing. Anyway, here's some of the performance they played for us live at the foundation. It's a good place to take a pause and get back to the interview itself. Excerpts from both an improvisation excerpts from the Book of Songs.
Oh, those were songs.
Songs, yes. Those were all vocal things. And we'll have a little bit more of their performance at the end of the interview. Let's go back now and find out if we've calmed down yet. Don't think so, though.
Yeah, but you have to have, I think for me it's important to have contact with audiences. So they're not too far. There's a lot of circumstances that make concerts work better, at least for a performance point of view, than others. For instance, we got performances for thousands of people in Japan, etc. And although they worked wonderfully, I don't have this kind of this feel of satisfaction for them. For instance, we had one concert which was really beautiful. They made a stage in the sea. We played in the sea on a certain time of the day where the sun was there and the moon was coming up there, etc. A very Japanese exaggeration, etc. So all the people, thousands of them, were sitting on the beach, so at least 20 meters far away. So now that's a wonderful setting for the audience, and also if you look at it. But if you are there on your little stage in the sea performing, you get no feedback.
Oh, of course.
From the people. You are there, you do your thing, and you can tell, get other people bored, etc. So I feel frustrated again there in my seducing possibilities, because I have to do something in the blind.
Mm-hmm. I had not
that I feel that that's frustrating, although it's a wonderful experience to do. But now I start realizing, what do I like about performances? Well, the people have to be pretty close. There may be many of them, I don't care, the more the better, but they have to be close. I have to be capable of relating to them.
What were you saying? You were about to jump in there.
And I loved it when we were on stage there, and there was a certain moment that I did not do anything musical, but only a visual act. Gottfried had like a kind of repetitive piece going on, and with like a fake fishing line, I did as if I was fishing from the stage into the water, but it was just a little small rope. And I loved it because there again,
because you feel unified with nature. That was the Japanese concept also. I think this unification of nature, natural.
It was so beautiful to be together. It was the water and the moon and the sun and the people there. And we were just human beings like them. And we were fishing, but we were not really fishing. And there were two ikebanas, left and right, very huge ones. So like the plants were there. And there was just, we were living beings together in nature. That was like...
I think I would, for my feelings, I would much rather have been at the beach, prepare my programs on CDs, putting them on the stage, etc., and so listen to my own thing, be part of the ritual the other side.
No, that's
how I feel.
Yeah, but that brings up a very good question, which is, how do you make CDs if the audience isn't there?
Well, CDs are, for me, are problematic. For most of my work, because it's true, I'm not actually particularly good at music, I think, in making it work on CD, because the CD is autonomous, is deprived of all these convincing elements. You don't have an audience, the audience, the people that listen to CD
do
not know what makes the sound, why does it make this sound, one, etc. So that is a problem. Yet we have to make CDs somewhere, because to get your music a little bit known and to interest people in what it is, it's only an element of the music, but it is an element of the music. And I know that it's not replacing music, and the final music of my compositions is not on CD. If you want to see Numaphones or you want to see the player piano, you have to come and see the player piano and see the Numaphones. And it's just a documentation, so to speak, of some musical reality.
And you know, of course, maybe you don't know, I should tell you that when we received Logos Works the first time and played it, we said, why is this music so pretty?
Oh, thank you for this nice compliment. Oh.
Well, I mean, but you know, we received something, when we receive something from Phil, Experimental Intermedia, we think this is on the edge, you know, and it's going to push, and we listened and we said, but this is pretty music. What? We're missing something here. This is beautiful music. It's not, it doesn't seem to push me. It doesn't force me to listen in a certain way. So that maybe, is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem. But I don't know. You see, that piece, Shifts, is actually, that's where that CD opens with. It's actually originally written for an ensemble. Where we do the beating, you see a big ensemble, etc. I never get it together. And that piece, actually, I could perfectly realize it on that CD, because it's very difficult to talk 14 musicians into playing together.
Yeah, well.
Exactly, because it's not an easy piece. It sounds like an easy piece, but it's musically speaking, it's very difficult to do. So I was pleased with that realization. We've done that on concerts, but normally also in concerts, that piece has a specific connotation. I always ask Monique to do some action there. Something very absurdistic, because the fishing line she was talking about in Japan is absolutely nonsensical act. And for every concert where we do that piece, she gets to invent a nonsensical act is adapted to the situation.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes, if it is in a, let's say, so some kind of, well, we had situations where we asked the guy, the bartender, to come on stage with a beer and serving her a beer or something like that. And this
sometimes like pushing a stone.
Or pushing a stone that's way too heavy for her.
And pushing. or just being on stage and being lazy on a beach, something that doesn't relate at all. And I think that kind of piece that is a very exceptional composition of yours, because it is not so structured.
It is extremely structured, Monique. It's extremely structured. It's one big bow. It's like what you said about Steve Reich. It's slow, but it's a little level,
and it's wonderful because it's in there.
It's completely algorithmic. It's completely computer generated.
Oh my goodness. I'm leaning on the edge. We are on a triangular table in the tetrahedron, yeah, and it just started to move my way as I put my elbow on it. Where are you going now? It's been 30 years. You've worked together. You've been doing the foundation. You've been doing these instruments. In which direction are you moving now? Both of you, each of you.
Well, for the moment, there are so many directions. And yesterday we were talking about, there are so many directions. How do we keep all these directions together? I think we don't have to keep them direct together. They will go somewhere with us.
But when you do your next composition, your next performance, when you look back and see how you have been changing over time, does that suggest where you're going to be moving? I asked the question earlier about so much electronic music out there in popular music, so many people like Blue Man Group, which started out as an alternative group, is now doing commercials for Intel. You know, so when you have people painted blue and doing percussion, you have electronics everywhere, where does that leave your experiment to go? You talked about algorithm, but Monique.
I think I still have a lot of things to do because, as I told you, what I miss in this commercial music is that, like, that content. I call it content because I don't have another name for
it. That's a good enough word. Yeah,
and
we use it.
And I want to make, to share with people a kind of feeling of a being togetherness. And I think that's not only a lifelong thing to do, but many lifelong things to do. That never ends, because it is always something that we will be always together, in the sense of we can always share. And we are living in a world where there is concurrence and money is very important, or the most important, and we see for the moment many difficulties with food and with environment, so we are in a very conflictual situation. And I think exactly in this moment we need music that is going the opposite direction of that, that says, no, don't let kill us, and don't let kill each other. Just be kind for each other, stay together, we can help each other, we can make a nice world together. And here is already some sounds that we can share. So I have no problems with everything already being done, because I see that the commercial life we live in and this kind of society we live in is going the other direction of the kind of ideal situation where humans live a good life. So I think we have a lot of things to do.
The corporatization of the world is troubling.
Yeah, we are cutting the woods, we are having polluted water, we are having poisoned food, we are having overpopulation, we are having emigres everywhere, refugees everywhere, people who look for a home, who have no home, we have wars everywhere. So I think there is a very big thing to do, that's give each other hope and give each other happiness and just go somewhere together. And that's what I want to do with my soundscape or my music box, of give you a laugh or
a good time,
a little bit of humor or just...
Maybe I'm just more pretentious. more modest in one sense, that I don't have this big idea, I can solve the world problems. But what I try to do with now doing, making hardware, making input devices and electronics, developing software, etc., is actually contributing to the expressive possibilities of man in general, because you give a little contribution to what we can use as tools for expression. It's only a part, and everybody, many experimental composers, as you said, because it's now used in all other musics, have contributed to that. So just one element in that process, because that's what I can do, what I think I have the skill for, of developing those things, and I have some originality in.
That's the thing where we completely agree. Yeah? You want to give to the people expression possibilities,
yeah,
and
tools.
I also want to, but on a very different way and at a different level, but just by making a very simple thing, like, and it rattles, it goes click, 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 if you move it, it's like, I can do that also. I love that reaction, because when you do something simple, but it must be a little bit humoristic, you can see something twinkle in people's eyes and have a laugh. And that is that aha, a leap is of something childish coming there.
Yeah, there
and
is that.
That
yeah.
Beautiful
yeah.
moment.
Yeah.
I think that is so precious, because at that moment there is no difference anymore between an artist and a non-artist. We are just all people together.
That's a moment of touching between
yeah.
between everyone, and every field actually can do that with if the people are interested in doing it. It's the separation which has taken place in some of the art forms. And the interesting thing is that I'm not sure that pretentious is the word. It's not the word at all. It's a sense of when you're working with an art form. At least this is my mm-hmm. feeling, is that when you're working with an art form, you're always on this very frightening place where you, on one side, you become a sort of an oppressive force, and on the other side, you become the kind of communication that can be had no other way, and you always risk falling one way or the other. And I suspect that sometimes that you're walking that line and you notice the line.
Sure, but no, I mean, so if I said pretension, I mean if you, as the illusion is by making beauty or by interesting people in itself, you contribute to peace, etc. There I'm a little bit more skeptical.
Well, I mean,
because Lenin loved the appassionata, and Hitler loved Mozart and lots.
Yeah, but Lenin and Hitler did not like new music.
Well, unless it was Karl Orff, maybe.
I don't think they could listen to a drone or water.
Not so sure. Well, okay, that's not a proof of whatever.
I think it's important in this world to give people hope. I think that's one of our most important things, because we have a lot of possibilities as a mankind now. We can do wonderful things, but we can do the most horrible things.
Hope is an ingredient of every commercial success. I mean, if Madonna makes success, it's because at her origin she sells hope. She had no fixed relation, so she is on stage and she is still obtainable, so to speak. So this element of hope is elementary for understanding pop culture.
That's on a completely other level.
No, but it's also hope.
No, it's hope of being living in a good world.
Well.
Oh well, we will not solve it. But I think at the end, that's what keeps us together working in Logos. I think that we both want to change something, to do something, that we want to have a contribution in society, and he wants to give on his way, and I want to do it on my way, and we work together, and it's different, but that's okay, that makes it more interesting. Yes. Think of both of us wanting to do the same thing.
And you have succeeded in a kind of architectural compromise with the mystic crystal in the shape of a stone and steel concert hall. So, Monique Bersh and Gottfried Wilmerast, thank you so much for joining us on Calvus and Damien. This has been a wonderful pleasure.
And thank you very much for coming all the way to here. That's a very big honor to us. Thank you for all the time offered.
Let's take a little trek back now to the rest of their performance that they did for us.
Oh, sure.
They were fun. Boy, we don't have too many sort of artistic domestic disagreements on Calvus and David. Well, let's listen to some more of the concert they did for us there at the Logos Foundation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, there we have it. They're going to give us a little tour at that point. So there they were, Monique Darge and Gertrude Willem-Raas, and their little event here on Calvus and Damien. And gosh, I wonder where Calvus and Damien is. I never quite know who's going to say what about us. Well, I guess we should find out what they're going to say next.
It's 9:35, 75, 36, 22 Martian Mean Time, and the following tones are for all our deaf fans out there in Radio Land. A greeting to all our deaf fans out there. My name is Matthew Fields, and I'm a contributor to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar on WGDR-FM, Plainfield, Vermont. Wouldn't you like to be a contributor, too?
Is that what that was? That was an old fundraiser he did for us.
Yes.
Yes, here on WGDR Plainfield, but he said that already.
He did.
He didn't say anything. We got red alerts, though.
No.
Oh,
no,
Dr. Matt. Dr. Matt will be here in August as well.
And he might even have some music performed.
Yes.
Well,
we're still in the organizational search phases of things. What do you got?
Not quite sure. It's from a new CD by Alex Keller, the 400 Boys, and this is simply called Landscape Still Life with Bug Lamp.
Fine.
Alex Keller from the 400 Boys. That was Landscape Still Life with Bug Lamp.
I do like that. Just got such a nice sound to it. Ah,
evocative.
Evocative indeed. Well, all right. A little conversation here briefly about the upcoming festival in August 25th and 26th. It's still on. We need, for our local listeners, we need lots of help in terms of...
money.
Well, of course, we need that. But yeah, we also need lots of help in terms of people. We need people to help run the tent where we sell the CDs to help sponsor the festival that on that weekend. People to help manage the concerts, bring people in and out, public and musicians, help them find their way. We have 130 to 150 composers and performers who are going to be here that weekend to perform, and so lots of them are going to need...
Shepherding,
psychological assistance, counseling. So look us up at calvos@calvos.org. That's K-A-L-V-O-S, in case you don't know by now. And or you can drop us a postcard here at the station, box 336 Plainfield, 05667, or contact us some way, shape, or form to let us know that you'll be available on the 25th and 26th of August to help out with the huge Ought One Festival, the Festival of Non-Pop, the very veritable Woodstock of non-pop.
So you keep saying, and so it will be.
Somebody's got to keep saying it.
Yes.
Well, and then let's just have a little quick look at the... listen to some of the music that we'll have coming up on the festival. One of our guests will be Jinhee Kim, and she will be playing electric komungo and doing some other work. Here's a piece called Dance of Meditation for... her komungo and some drum and
Javanese. You
want
to explain what a komungo is?
It's a lovely looking instrument. It's a large Korean stringed instrument. Very hard to kind of explain what it is. It's kind of like a koto on end, if
yeah,
that helps.
Yes,
it's
yeah,
quite a beautiful instrument. Let's listen to part of this. Brand new CD arrived from OO Discs with Jinhee Kim. It's called Self Portrait. And let's listen to one of those cuts from the CD. Thank you. from her CD Komungo Self-Portrait. That was Jinhee Kim. Two pieces there. We started off with Dance of Meditation. That was with Tuvanese throat singer, Kangar Olandar, and Shokumasuke Ukura on Otsusami drum. So that is the acoustic version of Komungo, and we wrapped up with the second piece, which was called Silk to Metal, for her electric Komungo.
And she will be here.
She'll be here. She and Joseph Celli will be doing a series of improvisations in concert stage number 3, the Atrium. On August 25th. So they'll be working the afternoon here on August 25th with electric Komungo and various double reeds from Joseph Celli.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have something.
WOO Revelator.
What?
This CD is called The Theory of Reversed Effort.
And you think it's a bunch of kids in a garage band.
Yeah, I think it might be, but this is it's an interesting title. It's Windmills in Space. And with that title, we'll just play it. Windmills in Space by WOO Revelator from CD The Theory of Reversed Effort. Whatever that means.
Ended with finger symbols, got to be good.
Yes.
And you have selected a classic.
Yes, we have received
LP.
LP, yes, just in. This is from 1987, but it's just into our library now. It's called All White People Look Alike. That's the name of the album by Brian Woodbury. He used to be a member of Some Philharmonic, which was a group of folks that broke off from the San Diego Philharmonic, and they produced one pretty interesting album a number of years ago.
Album,
yes.
It was an LP.
LP, yeah, album. And this is called My Favorite Things.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, white copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, simply remember my favorite things, and then I don't feel so bad.
I see. Yes, no fade out. My favorite things, written, programmed, performed, and produced by Brian Woodbury, formerly of Some Philharmonic. That on a real LP.
LP!
Just in.
Makes me just quiver my chimbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Only available on Calvos and Damon's New Music Bazaar.
Absolutely. And other things that are only available here are the Ought One Festival, OUGHT-ONE.com. April, listen to me. August, and I wish. August 25th and 26th.
The oof.
Right here. And so if you are an organizer, a helper, somebody who wants to eat or sell eats or any of those things, somebody who wants to come watch.
A facilitator.
You can email us, calvos@calvos.org. Drop us a postcard at WGDR, Box 336, Plainfield, or, gosh, even call us, but I'll come up with a phone number
right,
soon.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Okay, let's go out with two cuts from a new Matt Turner CD with his Yamaha electronic cello. These are improvisations, and we must talk about improvisation at some point because we have a improvisation subculture arising out of our group of guest composers and performers for the Ought One Festival,
who are organizing
an improvisational hour-long concert.
Mm-hmm.
Should be amazing, especially considering the people who have signed up to do it together.
Fine.
Chaos.
Yes, improvisational chaos. So let's listen to a little Matt Turner. This is Contraption and Blinker from his brand new CD called Crushed Smoke. Till next week, when our guest will be Bill Trimble. Here it is, Calvus and Damien.